Okay, we're recording.
Yep.
Welcome everyone to the Rink Rat Report podcast, joined by Jason today. Yeah, these are always really fun to record after the Leafs get absolutely spanked by the none other than the New York Islanders. I don't think there's a team in the league you want to lose 7-2 to. Like, think about each individual team in the league. Like, is there one where it's like losing to is like somewhat okay? Like, think about it. Like the Ottawa Senators, I would rather like spend five of my vacation days in Sudbury, Ontario than lose to them. Montreal Canadiens, further up north, push it further up, a couple hours even further up north. I'm not talking Muskoka. I'm talking, you know, somewhere where there's a mine of some sort, a nickel mine. Buffalo, it's the same sort of thing. They have some pretty annoying fans there. Vancouver, same sort of thing. The team you'd most want to lose to, I guess? That's a horrible question, but
it'd be the New York Islanders. I think that's the answer, just because it's like a multi-layered question or multi-layered answer. Because first of all, their style of play is disgusting to watch, and to make them look good offensively just hurts. Okay.
That's 47 one. Total shots in that game.
Yeah. And then two, they started chanting, "We don't like whatever. F you, John Tavares," whatever. Like, whatever. JT sucks. He hasn't played for your team.
We don't need you.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's like drunk calling your like grade seven crush when you're like 30 years old. Like, grow up, okay. Move on. Like, what are you doing here? Like, it's been 5 years since he's left. Like, grow up. Like, I don't know. Like, if I'm a player hearing we don't need you for the Islanders, and like, hey, maybe it was after year one, fine. But like, it's year five.
I don't grow know. Up. As long as you can hear something. I mean, it's better than like,
yes, yeah,
playing in Florida. If it was like you're down 4-2 on a Wednesday in Florida, you could probably like yell at someone in the 300s and they'd be able to hear you perfectly clear. Have a nice conversation, a talking conversation with someone in the 300s. So to hear "we don't need you" to Tavares, it would be like, all right, sure. But I mean, it's at least the fans are getting into it, but I'm with you totally. That was kind of weird behavior to be chanting that. Who the Leafs it would be like, "we don't need," it would be like
Bill Kessel. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
I actually don't know.
Like, even if the Leafs were to chant like to Zach Hyman, "we don't need you," like, even that, it's been two seasons now, and a half. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Who cares?
Exactly.
moved on.
Yeah.
Bo Horvat now. But anyways, moving on. This game started so well. If you'd missed this game, you're hearing me like that was our summary of it to start. This game started so, so well. It actually, like, I'm not being sarcastic here. It actually started very well. The Leafs go up 1-0. Sam Lafferty gets one off of his ass. Bobby McMahon gets his first NHL point. And then the pressure keeps mounting. They're getting chances. Mitch Marner feeds Erik Gustafsson on a wide, wide open net. And I got to tell you, making those paddle saves like that, it's incredibly lucky, but they feel so good. He had the whole net. And Sorokin, out of nowhere, just throws the paddle up, and then, I don't know, had some chances after that, but nothing real. I think David Kampf had a breakaway. I don't know why David Kampf is trying to deke on a breakaway. I don't know who he thinks he is, but apparently he thinks he's a skill guy out there.
Yeah, but, and I mean, I think that was the David Kampf thing on the penalty kill. I don't blame him. He's like a little, maybe he was feeling himself a bit, but I think that was the inflection point of the game, though, was that Gustafsson save. Like, feels like after that, everything just kind of went downhill for us. And you could just easily see that puck going in and us, and like the result of this being a complete opposite, where like the Leafs just smoke the Islanders after they go up 2-0, or was it 2-1 at the time or 2-0? Anyways,
it would have been 2-0. It was 1-0 at the time. I feel like, so there's the goal. They mounted some great pressure after that. And then, like, yeah, you're actually right. They did start to tail off after that. And then The Islanders scored at the beginning of the second period, I believe.
Yeah, and I feel like that's part of the Islanders style of play. Like, it's frustrating to, like, I talked about it being boring. Yeah. But yeah, of course it's boring to watch, but it's like frustrating as hell.
Neutral zone
trap. Like,
you know, it's not actually, yeah, like tonight's game, I don't want to touch on it too much more, but the way that the Leafs were outchanced in Ottawa and against Carolina, it played into the Islanders' favor. The Leafs in Ottawa and against Carolina played the neutral zone horribly. They could not have played the neutral zone any worse. So many turnovers while guys are trying to change. I don't know why guys are changing when we don't have possession in the neutral zone, but that was happening in both of those games. Just horrible puck management, never getting the puck deep. Turnovers at the blue line, turnovers at the red line, everywhere in between in the neutral zone. They played horrifically. No possession, no speed going through the neutral zone, no setting up anything. And like when you're playing the New York Islanders, who are going to play that neutral zone trap, which we saw all game today, you're going to have a lot of trouble if you can't figure out the neutral zone there. So then when you think about it, like, where did all the Leafs' chances come from outside of the David Camp one, which was on the penalty kill? It was off the cycle.
Yeah, finding soft spots in the slot off the cycle, trying to like get behind the defenseman. Like, the only real like good chance I could think of was they buried on it the Marner goal, where Marner was able to find that spot in the slot.
It was that Matthews had a couple good chances in there. As we mentioned, the David Kampf one. I feel like there was a couple other chances in there here and there. They got some good chances, I would say. Like, they got a few good looks. Where if you're playing Mads Sjogaard, you'd have five tonight. If you're playing Kochetkov, which both those guys are two young goalies, it's not a slight on them. They're just nowhere near as good as Sorokin. Sorokin's a top five goalie in this league. There's no debate about it, right?
Yeah.
Like,
so
you play a hot goalie, and he got you. No other way about it, right? But anyways. Not much more to say about this game. The Leafs turned over the puck 5,000 times. If NHL.com has any number less than 100 for giveaways by the Leafs tonight, they're undercounting it because it was horrible. Uncontested turnovers, guys just kind of standing there, not really picking up speed, guys not being open and being a viable option. Like, on that goal, The one where David Kampf made the pass, it went through Aston Reese, and then it was a tip from Clutterbuck. I believe it was the second or the third one. There were seven. It's kind of hard to keep track. But Frankie Corrado on TSN 1050 actually brought up a good point about that. He's like, okay, David Kampf didn't give you the best pass there, but it was a nice play from Riley to Gustafson or Gustafson to Riley, either one, and then to Kampf. And then you're keeping away from the pressure. David Kampf is under pressure. He's not going to give you the perfect pass. Zach Aston-Reese was standing still. Even if that pass was completed, where's that puck going?
Yeah, that's
nowhere. He didn't put himself in the greatest position. Like, I don't know. It was story of the night.
And that's one of problem with Zach Aston-Reese's game there is that he's never really active on the breakout. So maybe something we'll touch on a little bit later. But other than that, like, just tough game all around, suffocating. Yep. Boring, not fun to watch.
It's never fun to watch a 7-2 game, but a 7-2 game where there was 47 total shots between the two teams, that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
No other way to put it.
Yeah.
Anywho, let's get into the rest of the games. Let's kind of amalgamate them, I suppose. The Leafs, as you've mentioned, as you mentioned off air to me, the Leafs have won the expected goals battle since the trade deadline. How many games has that been? 15? Nine?
I think 8 or 9. I just
9 or 10, actually, including tonight.
Yeah, I closed the tabs.
Because so Lafferty has played 9 games before tonight.
Yeah, okay, so then let's call it 9 then. Just call it 9.
Yeah, the Leafs had 19 giveaways tonight to the Islanders, 8. Nice. Anywho, anyways, so there's been 10 games, we'll call it, since the trade deadline. The Leafs have won the expected goals battle, meaning they've outchanced the other team. The quality of shots from the quality of shots they've gotten compared to the other team, they've been higher or they've had a better expected goals in two of those games. Does that concern you at all?
Yeah, a lot, actually.
A lot.
It's concerning. Okay. I don't know how to, the best way to put this. It's not, maybe not concerning a lot, but it is concerning because that's not something that, like, that's not very on brand for this team. And I shouldn't have closed that tab because I want to see, like, if we were losing the expected goal battle because, like, we just weren't generating enough on average or compared to how much we normally would, or if it was like us giving up a lot of chances, or if it was just a mix of both, right? The two games that we did, funnily enough, the two games that we did when the expected goals battle in was the last, was this one we just played, the Islanders game. I don't know how we won that one, but it's, yeah. Before I get into the stats, I just want to mention it's from Natural Stat Trick, 5-on-5 scoring and venue adjusted expected goals. So if anyone wants to look that up, that's where you can find it. But yeah, Islanders, that was the game where we won the expected goals battle. And then the Oilers game, which was a electric game, a lot of fun to watch. And yeah,
I think you're forgetting the Canucks game. Oh, no.
No, the Canucks game,
47.44. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. So, yeah, so two games of the last nine where at least won a couple of them. They lost a couple of them. But yeah, like their play has not been as good or as strong as we've seen, like sort of in the midseason, like the middle of the season. And I think partially, like if you're just going to like look, like peel back the numbers and look a little deeper into like the situation of the team, well, it kind of makes sense. Like new players on a new team, like we have a lot of new guys, Achari, O'Reilly before he got hurt, Jake McCabe, Sam Lafferty, right? Like Eric Gustafson, Luke Shen, new guys, new places, new faces. And on top of that, like our regulars who were pretty good at, like, maybe they weren't the best, like point producers or like scoring generating players. They did produce like expected goals, like positive expected goal shares, both Rasmus Sandin and Pierre Engvall, to the point of like almost to the detriment of them, because like we regard them, at least I regard them as like, oh, they can do these things, but they're not good at actually finishing. Maybe Rasmus Sandin a little less than Pierre Engvall, but yeah, like we so those two things kind of coincide with that. But I am worried because like this has to stop at some point. We only have like 3 weeks left, 4 weeks left until the end of the season, and this needs to be figured out. On top of that,
11 games left, 10 games left.
I'm not sure exactly how many games left, but yeah. On top of
such
that,
a basic thing we should have.
Yeah. It's between 15 and 10. That I know for
okay.
Sure. So no, well, you know what? Now that I'm saying that, last week we said 15, so I'm going to go with 11. Okay. But yeah, so there's really no excuses anymore. Like we got to figure this out, right? Because we can't go off the excuse of new places, new faces, right? Like Brian O'Reilly's not going to play until like 3 games left in the season. So he's going to have to figure that out quick. So we got to figure out that quick. Do you think it's a problem? Are you worried at all? Like, is like my explanation kind of, is that?
No,
like
it makes sense. So that was game 70 tonight. We have 12 more games. And it definitely does make sense. It is like at the trade deadline, we liked the pieces we brought in. We liked what they brought. We liked their game with their respective shitty teams, with all due respect. None of their teams were playing very well. But like, it hasn't quite clicked. I mean, I'm trying to pull up the numbers here and see how certain guys have been performing, but it's like, I don't know, like the team itself. So overall this weekend, I'll take this weekend as an example. They played 7 defensemen on Friday, 11-7 on Friday, technically 10 defense forwards because Jesse Puljujärvi knocked out Noel Achari. So we had 10 forwards and 7 D for 2.5 periods. And then Ottawa, they went back to 12-6. And tonight against the Islanders, they went 12-6 again. And then the Avs, they went 11-7. The 11-7 just looked horrible. It did not look cohesive. And especially they gave up a ton of chances. Even against Ottawa, I would say too. Carolina more so. They gave up chances off of turnovers in the neutral zone and guys were changing, as I mentioned before. Like just bad line changes. It didn't, like when you have bad line changes, remember that game 5 against Columbus? Like there was bad line changes that led to chances against. Like it felt like that. And why is that? Well, because your lines were all jumbled. You have guys in places they usually aren't in. You have, on top of that, you're playing an awkward number of players. Like you don't have, you're missing a guy from one line and then you have an extra defenseman. When are they supposed to get out there? Like it just hasn't felt proper. And so we are trying new things. The Leafs are trying to figure out what their ideal lineup is going to look like. Not only which players are going to be in the lineup, but where are those players going to sit. So, but at what point do you actually like play games with that lineup? When are you going to figure out what that lineup is? Like, what's the cutoff point where you're like, okay, like we need to start getting ready for playoffs. Like if you're not on the, if you haven't cut the roster for the playoffs, like you are going to be sitting from now on. And on top of this, like Matthew Nyes is supposed to come in and sign an entry level deal. We've already seen Ryan Tverberg out of University of Connecticut sign his entry level deal. Johnny Tychonic signed with the Marlies on an AHL deal. Like Matthew Nyes is going to be coming in April, it seems. Like how they're running out of time to figure out this top lineup. Like there are 12 games. I guess six games should, I don't know, you should be able to build chemistry with your line mates over six games, but it's like, I don't know. It's felt bad. It's felt like just not cohesive.
Yeah, absolutely. Really. And like, well, listen, we did this last year, right? And like last year, it's different because we didn't really make a splash in free agency. We didn't really make like those kind of ads, but we were jumbling down the stretch. We were moving up and down the line. But I feel like the only line that kind of stuck together was that first line. Cause I think it was around this time last year when they started playing around with the Nylander on the third line with Camp. I don't know. I might be remembering that incorrectly, but
and how did that work out?
Not good, but hey, we have a different look this year. So I don't blame him for trying, but I think the approach that Sheldon Keefe is taking might be incorrect. I think he's not taking the right approach to this. Simple as that. But just because I feel like the most important thing is to get Jake McCabe's feet under him. I think that's the most important thing because of all other than Ryan O'Reilly, obviously, like, but he Ryan O'Reilly's a vet. I'm sure you can honestly plug him anywhere and he'll be able to figure things out. Jake McCabe also like a veteran guy, right? But I think his presence is a little more important because I think defense is a lot more. It's a lot different than forwards, right? Playing defense is a lot different than playing forwards. And I think cohesion is incredibly important for defensemen. I think that's like, I think you can jumble forwards more so than you can jumble defensemen because a lot of forwards is like, I don't want to say it's less feel, but like knowing your partner for defensemen is like a very important thing to do, right? Like knowing what they're going to do, knowing what their habits are, knowing their instincts, when they're going to jump up in the rush, when they're going to support you on the rush, right? Like, You kind of saw it on the Riley Gustafson goal. Riley wasn't looking not the Riley Gustafson goal. The breakaway goal where Marner passed it to Riley. I think it was the fourth goal.
Yeah.
And Riley jumped up in the rush. And that's not what you should be doing. You should identify that Gustafson's already up there. So either he didn't see that or maybe that's something that can be mitigated when you're playing with a guy for many years. You know that he's going to jump up in the rush. So yeah.
Like, wow, no way. Riley and Gustafson were on. Was it Gustafson on the ice there?
I assume it was Gustafson. I'm not sure though.
It would make sense because there was just nobody back there. And
yeah, exactly. Well, so
we all know how Eric Gustafson likes to play hockey. So.
Might have been Justin Hall. Might be casting stones at the wrong guy. But again, it doesn't like that's beside
either way. Morgan Riley set himself up horribly for that pass. Like on surface level, you could say, okay, Mitch Marner fed him a pass into his skates. It's like, okay, well, his stick was covered. His stick was passed. Like you could have easily set yourself up if you slowed yourself down a little bit for a nice pass there. And like Mitch Marner is doing what he's supposed to. The neutral zone was locked down. You need to build speed through the neutral zone. So if Morgan Riley is going to be getting that puck, or if Morgan Riley's actually going to be like a viable option in that play, you need to build up speed from behind there. But you can't be flying up the ice, like double covered and not give the forward any sort of passing option like that. Like Mitch Marner up to fail. It felt like on that play, like maybe it wasn't the best pass from Marner, but like you feed that to his stick and it's getting turned over either way. Like I felt like Morgan Riley put himself in a horrible situation there. Also, I just wanted to, I'm seeing this now. So Nylander, since the trade deadline, has been on the ice at 5-on-5 for 5 goals, 4 and 10 against. His on-ice save percentage is 8.592.
Not good.
That's not good. Crazy.
Oh, well,
but like he was getting the benefit of PDO at the beginning of the season. Yeah. So now it's just, you know, coming back the other way.
Yeah.
Happens. Everything regresses towards the mean.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, back to what I was saying about the lineup though. I want to hear your thoughts about like the decor and how we're like kind of deploying them. And I know you don't like the 7D. And yeah, I've come around to that more and more, especially with the way that we're deploying it, right? Because I think I mentioned last show that the best way to deploy it is to have like specialty guys in the bottom three, I guess,
yeah,
as your 5, 6, 7, and then let the top four play boatload of minutes, right? So, but yeah, do you think that, like, I don't know, do you think that Sheldon Keith should be trying to make more of an effort to get Jake McCabe more stability?
It's a great question. I mean, TJ Brody didn't play tonight, right? And then Mark Giordano didn't play. Mark Giordano didn't play Saturday. And so it's like, like, you make a great point. Jake McCabe is the number one player that you need to get acclimated into this team. He is the most important. And why is that? Well, he's going to be someone that's supposed to be playing over 23 minutes a night in the playoffs. He's supposed to be a big minutes munching defenseman. And so if you have him, you know, in limbo, we don't know who his partner or who he plays best with going into the playoffs, you're setting yourself up for a complete disaster. So that's a great point there. In terms of the other D, like, I don't know, like, should you be, like, at what point are you going to stop with, like, Shen and Gustafson? Like, I understand certain guys need, like, I can see them next game maybe scratching someone that played this game and putting.
I'll tell you right now, he's probably going to scratch Logan just because of that goal that came off that, even though there was like.
Even though he had an assist too. He was the primary assist on the Lafferty goal.
Even though, I mean, that basically his goal, even though there was 3 or 4 turnovers just from Justin Hall's stick alone that just didn't end up turning to a goal. You know that the way that Sheldon Keefe kind of.
Everyone turned it over though.
Yeah, everyone's exactly.
Everyone was horrible.
But you know that he just like, Keefe just likes to default to like the youngest guy making a mistake like that. And not blaming him. Like, again, like that's a mistake. Those things shouldn't happen. But I think he'll probably get scratched. And like, I don't know if that's good for Liljegren. I feel like last year we saw like whenever he got scratched, it kind of took a couple games to get his feet under him. He's looked good this year. And ever since he's been scratched, he's not looked that good. So it's I wonder if there's any.
This game, I thought he was playing well up until that turnover. And
that's the thing. He looks good. Sorry to cut you off there. He looks good, but like it's these like small moments where he just makes these like weird errors that are uncharacteristic of what I've seen earlier in the season.
Yeah. So, like, this has just been some awkward hockey from the Leafs. Like, and then when you look at, I don't have it in front of me, their record since the All-Star break, I believe it's like 10. Not 10-6-1. That would make absolutely no sense. I can't find it. They're above 500. Anyways.
I think you're right with the 10-6-1. I think that's the right, like something around there. But like they're not losing games. It's not like, listen, it's not like a referendum on the team. We need to.
It's 5-2-1.
Yeah. So it's like, it's not like it's a referendum on the team.
Or sorry, 5-3-1 now.
So close to 500.
It's like, yeah.
Again,
it's like, I don't know. Like when you look at it, okay, Edmonton, you got pounded. Calgary, that was a very close game. That was a solid game, whatever. Vancouver, you know, bit unlucky, had some chances early, didn't win. New Jersey slightly outplayed the Leafs in that one, but the Leafs played all right in that one. Edmonton, they were the better team. The Sabres, it all fell apart in the second. Colorado was just a very tight game. They took way too many penalties in that one, which really, really killed them. And then you have the Hurricanes, the Senators, and the Islanders this past weekend. Like, all of them has just been awkward, not good start to finish. And like, I don't like to make huge deals of like, oh, like a regular season loss, like go full, what is it? Tobey Maguire. What's that movie where he's with Natalie Portman and he's destroying his house?
I don't know.
I got to find it. Anyways. But like it's been what, 10 games, we'll call it, of just like awkward looking hockey.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it's scary because like we're getting close to the playoffs now, and like,
I'm
feeling the vibe of like, hey, like let's just get in the playoffs. And honestly, maybe that's how the team feels too, right? Because listen, if we look over at the NHL scoreboard tonight, Tampa Bay lost to the Montreal Canadiens. We're not the only team in the playoffs that are losing games to like bubble / non-playoff teams, right? So it's not like, it's just the, I think the
Pittsburgh
the
most had 47 shots and lost to Dylan Ferguson.
Exactly. And I think they
might not make the playoffs.
Yeah. And the most important thing is that like, that the most important thing that worries me is that it's not looking good. It's not like bad process, right? Yeah. Like I always preach process over outcome, and the process just doesn't seem like it's there. And I don't know if that's because the lineup shuffle or if it's because of just the disdain of these last 10 games, 15 games, whatever.
It's looked shitty since Ryan O'Reilly went out.
Yeah.
Because then the lines have not made any sense since.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So maybe
like,
it is.
Sam Lafferty is not a center, in my opinion. If you want, like, I don't know, like, he just chases the puck too much.
Yeah.
And, like, in my opinion, actually, Sam Lafferty, like, going back through a few of his plays, like, he's had some moments with David Kampf. He had a good slip backhand pass in the Carolina game with him. I think there was another chance with in the Ottawa game, maybe here and there. Like Lafferty's had flashes, but hasn't quite been able to look consistently good. But it's also like, well, why is that? Well, he's playing a lot of center. I don't know. And it's just been an awkward fit.
For sure. And I think it's like, I like when he plays wing, and I think it's funny because I'm getting so like, I don't know what the word is, not scored. Anyways, like we were like gushing about him after that one game at center. At least I was, not you. Sorry. I don't want to lump you in there, but
I was like, hey, this line could work because
against the Devils, right?
Yeah. It was against the Devils. What was the next game after that? They probably lost. Oh, is that an Oilers game?
Oilers.
The disaster one. Yeah. I don't remember what happened there, but I don't remember how long they kept it together. But yeah, that was because they had Nylander and Yarncroc on the line. I don't know. Like, I don't think it stayed together that long afterwards. But no.
Yeah. But I agree with what you're saying, though, in the sense that he does in theory work and in practice with David Kampf. Because
yeah.
The hub
that's your Pierre Engvall.
Exactly. The hubbub of when Pierre Engvall was traded. It's like, hey, like look at David Kampf without Pierre Engvall. It's like we need a guy like him who can play. There he is. That's literally like a perfect guy for him to play with. But it just looks like
transporter.
It just looks like the opportunity hasn't been there since Ryan O'Reilly's been hurt. But it's ironic because when he was healthy, we also didn't do that because we had, was it Achari playing 3C or Kampf playing 3C, Achari playing 4C?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, anyways, sounds something like that. So just funny and kind of awkward to see that. But yeah, I like David Kampf. Maybe we can transition into like the forwards talk a bit.
Let's do it.
Because this game in particular, I'm just gonna go for it right now. This game in particular, and I think like the Senators game as well, Matthews rocking his own line. No Marner, no Kerfoot, no JT, not that he ever really would play with JT, but yeah, none of the big guns on his line. And he's just kind of rocking and carrying his own line a la Sidney Crosby back in 2016. I want to say, anyways,
probably every year, pretty much career. Every year.
But the Matthews rocking his own line. And like, if we're going to start like from the bottom, just talking about David Kampf working with Sam Lafferty and work our way up, like Matthews, like, do you think that he works alongside those two guys? Do you think he can make that work? Like, what do you think?
Works alongside Kerfoot
and
Yarncroc? He works with Yarncroc. I'll just say that.
Okay.
I don't know. I kind of despise Kerfoot in a top six role. He's more of a bottom six utility guy. I don't know. The stuff that he does with the puck just pisses me off. I feel like Matthews did play well in the Carolina game, and he played well in the Ottawa Senators game. Like I think I tweeted something like this. Like the Leafs expected goals percentage, so their chance percentage was 31% against Carolina and like 29% against Ottawa, something like that. Auston Matthews was up at 67% against Carolina and over 70% against Ottawa. So essentially, when Auston Matthews was not on the ice, it was a total and utter disaster. The Leafs couldn't do anything. They couldn't keep the puck out of their own end, pretty much. And like, so to your point, is the carry your own line thing something you're going to carry into playoffs? I mean, I don't know. The one thing, like, you could say, oh, look, it looked great in these two games. I don't know. Tonight, I don't know how it really worked out. I don't think it really did. Well, I think most of Auston Matthews' chances actually came from passes from Mitch Marner. So,
yeah.
Well, tonight it kind of fell short. But also, the one thing I want to point out, okay, he looked great. Did the second and third lines do much?
Not really.
No. So it's like, I don't know. We've seen Nylander carry his own line, but it's like the game where he played with Lafferty and Yarncroc, he carried his own line there. We've seen moments where he looked really good with Alex Kerfoot, but like, it's not the most sustainable kind of option because those aren't the most sustainable centers. So, like, I'm not saying Nylander can't carry his own line. I think he would look terrific with Ryan O'Reilly, but it's like, I don't know. Everything just feels so awkward with the Leafs right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough.
Not giving up. I'm not.
No, of course.
But it's just, it feels off. Like, to win a game 5-4 against the Sens in a shootout on Saturday, like, and just to give up 52 shots to the Ottawa Senators, we're playing some decent hockey, but it's like, I don't know, like, there is something not 100%, not 100 emoji, we'll call it here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I think it's so tough with Matthews though, right? Because I think he does have the ability to do that, but you're right. Like, this game we saw when poop hit the fan, like, he went back to bunting Matthews, Marner,
yeah,
Tavares, Nylander, and Kerfoot, or was, I don't know if he's drunk, whoever it was. Like, and it's like, why are we doing all this if that's just what you're gonna go to come game one of the playoffs? Because like, if you're,
that's a good point,
right? Like, if why, what's the point of this? Are you trying to like hide your hand from like John Cooper? Does Tampa even care? I doubt it. Right? Like, what is the point of this other than the fact that, like, again, like we said earlier, even though I feel like it means less forwards to play together, why not just try and build up that line chemistry and get guys going and feeling confident with the guys who they're playing with? So yeah, like, I don't know, but one thing's for certain though, with this deployment of our lineup right now with Nylander, when Nylander was on that third line, is that you're right. We don't have that center depth to do this unless O'Reilly and Tavares are separate. Because if they're together, this is not happening. Like, Nylander will probably be with Matthews or JT and O'Reilly, and Marner will be with Matthews or the other line, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
In conclusion, what you brought up with the, when things started not going very well, he went back with Matthews, da 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 da. Like, the Leafs lineup right now, we're saying, oh, he's trying things to see what's going to work for the playoffs, trying things out. Let's see what works, but, and all that jazz. What the hell did they try out that they were seriously considering that they were going to play in the playoffs? For the past three games, even.
Nothing.
Three or four games.
Feels like nothing. Like, the only
what was this a test run for? Like, you took a Honda Civic out onto an F1 track. And, maybe we'll race this thing. No, You're not. You were never going to do these lines. So what was the purpose of all of this? What was the purpose of this show and dance of calling out Nylander to the media? Oh, he's got to get his feet moving. Like, all right. But like, we have 10 games until the playoffs starts, and you're putting him with Lafferty and McMahon as a punishment? I don't know.
I don't know. Did you think that was a punishment?
Well, it was when the coach says you got to get your feet moving, it's not really a kind thing, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think the way he said it was like
to get him going. But yeah, it's like the funny thing is with like putting those three together, like to get him going, like who on that line, if you're going to get Nylander going, who of the other two options are the playmakers? That was tonight. Bobby McMahon had his first point, his first NHL point. That was his first assist since like January, including the AHL. He's a goal scorer. He's a pure goal scorer. Like Sam Lafferty is not the, is a whatever playmaker, is not the greatest. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's like,
no, yeah, that's definitely a weird fit. Weird. Yeah. But yeah, it's like, why?
I don't know.
It's just, yeah, it's so unfortunate what happened to Ryan O'Reilly, because again, like,
yep,
he'll give this team so much clarity, and
yeah,
in Leafs fashion, we're not going to get it until that clarity, until, well, we won't know what happens until like we get to that playoff. So
yeah,
we don't know.
It also sucks. It sucks what happens with what happened with Matthew Nyes.
What
plays on a very good college team that will probably go deep.
Yeah. Like the best college team in the country.
The best, the number one rated college team in the country. He plays for them. Kind of sucks for the Leafs. I would have liked him to play tonight. Right.
Yeah, honestly. And so, I feel like we checked this again, but the last game of the Frozen Four is April 6th to 8th Amalie Arena. So at least he'll get comfortable there. So if we have a game on the 6th, a game on the 8th, and then a game on the 10th, 11th, and 13th. So we might be seeing them at earliest, maybe last 6 games of the season, latest last 3 games of the season. And that's assuming he comes in and plays for this team, which again, like knowing how we treat I don't want to say treat our prospects, but like our prioritizing of, I don't want to say veterans, but like more NHL players who've shown something in the NHL over guys who haven't, like who's to say he will even play. So who knows? We'll see.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anyways. I mean, positive notes from the week, Kerfoot scored a goal finally, even though it was in a shootout.
That's positives of the week.
Yeah, it's like might as well just drop some of those right now, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, they went up early in the Ottawa game and the in the Ottawa and Carolina game. That was good.
Yeah, and they played well in the Carolina game too. That was like
probably Carolina game was an interesting one. I have a bunch of notes here on it. So yeah, they had to grit that one out. It was 10 forwards, right? It kind of failed to get sustained pressure in the offensive zone, which is why they didn't get that many shots. They got slammed by breakdowns in the neutral zone, as I mentioned, and off of line changes in the neutral zone and bad line changes that really killed them there too. But they were helped out by the fact that Aho was playing with Jesse Puljujärvi, who we've talked about his finishing ability on the show. It sucks, but the Leafs really did take advantage of breakdowns from the Hurricanes in the neutral zone as well. Like the Riley goal was a breakdown at the Leafs blue line by the Hurricanes. The Marner goal was a breakdown at their own blue line. The Zach Aston Reese goal, I talk about bad line changes. That was just a late line change that they never picked up, and he was wide open on that one. So they took advantage of opportunities that they were given in the neutral zone. And they made them pay for it. I mean, the third period, the Hurricanes got a bunch of shots, and it was like, I don't know, there wasn't that many. There was maybe one or two that I was like, oh, that's a pretty good chance, but wasn't that, you know, stupendous. Well, no odd man rushes, really. Just like rush opportunities, which is a little different. But anyways, yeah, it was a good win. It was an unsustainable type of win. If you give up that many shots to a bunch of different teams, you're going to lose more of those games than you win. The Leafs did score 5 nice goals. They were playing a pretty young goalie in Kochekov. I can't remember his name. And on top of that, they had some really good chances too. They didn't have many shots, but they had 5 nice goals. Nylander had a great power play chance. Matthews had 3 rush chances on top of his goal. And Sam Lafferty gave Kampf a really nice look too. So it was a great, it was a better game than the Senators game, which was not good.
Yeah. I think that was probably our best game. And the Avs game was kind of back and forth.
Yeah.
Type game.
Low event game, but like it was still pretty entertaining, I would call it.
Yeah. Just that team is going to be scary once they get Landeskog back. So
yeah.
They look good. And
Dennis Malgin scoring for them somehow.
I mean, hey, surprised he didn't score against us.
I'm also very surprised.
another positive. I don't think any former Leafs scored against us this week. And we played Malgin and Engvall, but very on brand for Engvall not to score against us. That's like Engvall.
I wonder if he won the expected goals share. That would have been an Engvall win. That would have been a big Engvall type win.
I'm going to check Money Puck right now just because you mentioned that. Let's see. No, he got absolutely torched. Oh my God.
What
17%.
Was
so.
Wow.
Yikes.
That's funny. Anyways. So moving forward, I think like pretty much what we're looking to see is some actual serious lines, you know. Like your Marners with your Matthews or your Matthews with your Nylanders, Tavares, that sort of thing. Like, I like giving Bobby McMahon the opportunity to play with Nylander, but it's not a serious playoff combination. Like, play what you're going to actually, like last year you mentioned, we tried that experiment, David Kampf with William Nylander. Like they put them on together in the playoffs and it lasted 3 seconds, but for 3 straight games, they started with that. I don't know why. Yeah, maybe it was a tactical kind of mind games thing, but
I don't know if it worked. And I don't think it did
anything.
Like, I feel like that guy just doesn't care about that stuff that the other, like, no, I feel like he's the stupid. Most like, I don't care what you do. We're going to do what we're going to do no matter what. And you can do whatever the heck you want. Cause we've won. Two Stanley
on top
Cups.
Of that, no more bunting on the fourth line. Like enough's enough. If the guy's not playing up to your standards, you have to find a different way other than messing up all the lines in order to do it. And as I incoherently ramble, the more that I think about, like the more like we're going to see how much longer we see Alex Kerfoot in the top 6.
I don't know.
I could see it going on until Ryan O'Reilly's back. Like, this probably is getting ridiculous.
Probably.
Like, when this guy hasn't scored a goal in like 30 games. Yeah, he hasn't been doing that much at 5-on-5 play. I haven't been overly impressed by him. But it's like then again, who else are you going to put there?
Yeah, I don't know. Like you said earlier, he's best suited in the bottom 6, but somehow always works his way up to the top of the lineup. So
yeah, who the hell would you put there?
Bobby McMahon? I don't know.
No.
Gotta get creative.
Who would you put in the top 6? That's so weird. I can't even think of anyone.
Ryan O'Reilly.
Oh, it would back. Be sorry, I'm dumb. So if you wanted to do like tonight's line of Bunting, Tavares, Marner, sure, you would just go Nylander, Matthews, Yarncroc.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. Yeah. So what are your playoff lines look like for forwards?
I think I would, I don't know. It's,
what do you mean you don't know?
I think I would do, I okay, so
that's some great journalism. Right
yeah.
What are the Leafs' ideal lines? I don't know.
I'm just trying to buy myself some time here. That's what I was trying to do.
Do you want me to go first?
No. I bought myself enough time now. So
okay, go.
I think I do know what I'm going to do now. And I think I'm going to off the hop mention that it's like a kind of a logic puzzle with playing Marner with Tavares or Matthews. Okay. Cause I think that's probably who he's going to play with. There's no other centers that he could play with unless actually they could do Ryan O'Reilly with him, but I don't think they would disrespect Tavares like that and put like, cause in my head, whatever line Marner's on is essentially our first line in the sense that they will be against the other team's best line just because of his two-way ability.
Yeah.
I think that makes the most sense. So, I think I would roll with Marner and Tavares together just simply because Matthews without Marner is still a good line, but it feels like Marner without Tavares without Marner is not the best line. And I feel like Marner okay. with Tavares, the difference between Marner with and without Tavares is much greater than, the difference between Tavares with and without Marner is like the gap is much greater than Matthews with and without Marner. I feel like that gap is a lot smaller.
Okay, sure. I buy it.
Yeah, zero evidence to back that up, by the way. That's just how I feel, how they play together. And just basing off the last 2 years, kind of. And from there, I'd probably let's slap Michael Bunting on that line. Why not? And then from there, I'd probably go.
So you'd go Bunting, Tavares, Marner?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I'd go the same that the line that we were rolling today with Matthews. I'm going to try and keep the same with Yarncrook and Kerfoot. I think that could work. And then let's have a little fun and go O'Reilly, Nylander, and Matthew Nyes. Let's have some fun with it.
What?
You don't like that? I'm a little not a fan of that?
Because no.
You don't like that?
So okay. Your ideal playoff suggestion has Alex Kerfoot in the top six?
Yeah, it's like a pseudo top six. It's like essentially it's top nine that you would roll. And then your fourth line of Lafferty, David Kampf, and Nolichari. I mean the chances of Alex Kerfoot being in our top six are very likely come playoff time.
I hate hearing that a lot. Oh man!
I mean, as long as he's on the ice and they're not scoring, I feel like it's not. Especially if he's in the top six and they're not scoring, I'm okay with that.
But you need to score.
That's true.
We already went through this whole thing where it was our top six couldn't score, but they weren't getting scored against.
If you're playing
in Montreal,
You're playing with Austin Matthews and Cali Yarncrook, I feel like if you're playing with those two guys, that line's going to score. So you'd hope at least. Maybe. But what's your ideal lines?
I mean, sure. I'll keep with yours with the Yarncrock Nylander, I guess. Okay, so Marner, Tavares, Yarncrock.
Okay.
Bunting, Matthews, Nylander.
Okay.
O'Reilly, Lafferty, Nyes, and then Achari, Kampf, Kerfoot, something like that.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I think I like O'Reilly, Kerfoot, Nyes maybe better.
Yeah,
because maybe
O'Reilly or like Kerfoot, Nyes.
Yeah, because I think maybe because Lafferty might work better with David Kampf. Those two guys are kind of interchangeable. I like those.
Kevin
lines.
Papetti
like those
put
lines.
Out a good thread actually on Matthew Nyes, and your brother was messaging me about it, and he said one thing he noticed was like the puck efficiency, and like. What was the exact words he used? It was something along the lines of, I'm trying to find it, but I cannot. Saying something about like, the puck management. Puck management, I think, is the word.
Puck management was the word. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, who's a better puck manager, Lafferty or Kerfoot? It's been Kerfoot from what I've seen, 100%. Mm-hmm. So, I understand what you mean there. And Kerfoot also is a good puck mover. He can transporter, call it. So that also works into it as well. So that's like, I don't care if Lafferty's on the fourth line, like, to be quite honest. I think he'll make an impact if he's on the wing in the bottom six, like, just to be 100% clear. The reason I said O'Reilly Lafferty, I mean, in the 1.5 periods that they played together, they actually did have a couple of decent chances, but yeah, I think something like that could work.
Like you said, with the puck management thing with Kerfoot, like, O'Reilly's also like, what better center would you put like your rookie with than Ryan O'Reilly, yeah, who's like
Ryan O'Reilly's a very good setup man, and Matthew Nice has a very hard shot, so that'll help you right there.
Yeah, that seems like a seamless transition to get Matthew Nice in there. So, yeah, I like that. Those are two. I like how you did your lines.
And even then, like, you can mix it up. Like, I wouldn't mind another combination. You could keep Matthews Yarncroc together because Matthews, I don't know, suddenly becomes channels his inner Mitch Marner whenever Yarncroc is on the ice, seemingly recently. And then you have Nylander or Marner on the other wing as well. And then if you wanted to do, I don't know, Tavares, Nylander, Bunting or something like that, you can do that. Maybe that'll work. Once Ryan O'Reilly comes back, you have options. But like, I think in terms of your second line left wing, or your that left wing that we said we were missing in the trade deadline, I think Yarncroc has filled that role pretty nicely.
Yeah. He's been good. And I feel like he's kind of done that all season. And yeah, like you said about Matthews kind of being a playmaker, you mentioned that earlier also on Twitter. I don't know if you mentioned that today, but yeah, that earlier on Twitter.
What happened today?
Primary assist on the Marner goal. Yeah.
19th of the year. I think that puts him top 10. So
yeah, 71 points on the year, 63 games. Feels like it's a down year for Matthews, but he's still almost 10 points over point per game. So it's
not bad. I mean, everyone's up on scoring too. Yeah. And like, also you got to think about it. Like the majority of his scoring, the majority of Austin Matthews' scoring came in the second half of the year. So like, that was fresh on our minds. Like 50 goals in 50 games was technically just past the second half of the year. So his hottest months were the freshest in our minds. So like, when you weren't seeing him play to that level, it was like, damn, like, he's really far down. But it's like, also, he's over a point a game. So
yeah, I'm not that far down. I'm still going to bet him to win the Rocket next year.
That would be a better price, right?
Much better price, yeah. But
not bad. That's a good best bet. You probably still won't get a good price because he plays in Toronto, but
we're just
trying to outsmart ourselves here. Anyways, so those are the playoff forward lines there. Don't think there's too much else to talk about, like, really outside of, like, really just outside of, we need to start seeing some more serious lines on the forwards and on D2. Like, if you want to, like, I don't know, like, I don't care if you rotate some of these bottom guys in and out, like, actually, no, but then you're defeating what I'm saying. Like, what should they do with the D to keep Shen and Gustafson fresh? Because it seems like one of those two aren't going to be. Or maybe
Timothy.
What the hell do they do with DD? Like, this is getting stupid.
I don't know. Just the most important thing is get McCabe a partner. I actually don't care what they do with the D other than just get McCabe some stability.
I think it'll be Brody.
I hope so, because on the panel seems to think that Morgan Rielly and DJ Brody need to play together. And anyways.
There's that too. I mean, and then McCabe Liljegren has had its moments.
They're not going to do McCabe Liljegren because I don't think the trust is not there from Sheldon Keefe to put Liljegren in those positions where you'd want McCabe to be. That's my
100%
two cents on it. But anyways. Yeah.
So if it's not Liljegren, it's not Rhodey, then who the hell is it?
Luke Shen, Justin Hall. I don't know. Probably. It'll probably be Justin Hall. That's usually the the answer when it comes to Sheldon Keefe with that stuff. So
yeah,
seems like he's always the answer.
That's I don't know. That's kind of a shitty answer. Not like I don't like your answer. Like I think it's reasonable. I think it's viable. I think it will. It could very well happen. I just don't like hearing that.
Yeah.
Like that's like wanting a pony for Christmas and getting a pair of wet socks. But yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible. I'm surprised they haven't tried Riley and McCabe together. I wonder why that hasn't been.
I think it's just because they see McCabe as the left-handed defenseman. I don't think they foresee him pushing over to the right side. And if, even if you do, who's the that's third? True. Like, is it Gustafson as our third lefty? Then you have
that's actually a really good point.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, they don't see. Yeah, it's pretty clear that they don't see him as a right D, as at least as of this season. But maybe next season.
Maybe
probably
next
not.
Season.
Probably not. But that's a good point there. Okay. Yeah. So we have our forwards. I think the forwards to me is a lot more clear than what the D is going to be, simply because outside of like Brody and McCabe, there's a lot of deficiencies in the other ones.
Yeah.
So yep. We'll see. Take it day by day. Just like the Jim Benning press conference from what I think it was last year. Yeah. We're just taking this day by day. All right, Jim. Anyways, that's all I had for today. Matt Murray bounce back performance. I don't know how we didn't talk about that at all. 48 saves. He's still not our starting goalie for playoffs, but that was pretty cool to see in his former building, right up,
yeah,
right in Jason's dome.
Yep, right in my dome.
Right
he
after
the game. I thought he wasn't going to play. He played.
Well, because they called up, they emergency recalled Joseph Woll right before the game. And right away, everyone just went mental. Like, what's wrong with this guy this time? What could it possibly be?
And it's just like, oh, by the way, Samsonov's having
it. It's actually Samsonov. Actually. We're starting Matt Murray and he's going to play awesome, which he did. So, yeah. All right. That's all I had for today.
All right.
Who are we up next?
We got the Panthers on Thursday. Then we get the Canes again on Saturday. Predators on Sunday. All
pesky.
Three road games.
They're playing.
And then
on Sunday, we have a Saturday-Sunday.
Saturday-Sunday back-to-back. And then we don't play until Wednesday against the Panthers.
I just love that. Isn't it Wednesday and then Saturday again?
Wednesday and then Saturday again. And then another. Oh, we have two back-to-back Saturday-Sundays.
That's so weird.
That is such good scheduling by the NHL. It's like they should almost get an award.
Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday. Is that seriously the schedule?
No, for this week, it's Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, then Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, but there is a Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday.
Yes. Yes.
Streak.
Yes.
Fanatics. It's the official jersey licensor. We're getting either five games in a row or no games at all. Our pets' heads are falling off. Like, what the hell is going on with this league? Who's in charge here?
I think we know.
Anyways, that's all I had. You have anything else?
I'm good.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Goalies go. Let's go.